dominion to the clouds and into the cosmos. We are pumping wattage high and low, streaming worldwide on the internet, and keeping you company tonight. Every Saturday, the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub Saturday nights here. And now, he is often called the Nighthawk, a man who smoothly guides you through the dark hours when the moon is high and you're ready to hear the story behind the story. Though they have never met him, millions of people consider George Norrie a friend because he practically dwells in that realm between wake and dreaming when reality becomes a bit flexible. He's at the legendary helm of Coast to Coast AM, the top-rated overnight radio program in the world. That alone is an overwhelming responsibility, and so it's truly remarkable that Norrie is also an author and an Emmy-winning TV journalist. He was the country's youngest news director at the age of 28, and now he's still bringing groundbreaking content to the screen with his new TV pilot on the Sci-Fi channel called Into the Unknown. It airs June 13th, 11 p.m. It's a great honor for me to be a part of that show, and a huge honor to say, George Norrie, welcome to Speaking of Strange.
Joshua, it's my pleasure. You know, it's kind of funny. You said, though, I haven't met the millions of people who listen to Coast to Coast. I have, because we've installed a device in everyone's radio that allows me to see everybody at any given time.
I would not doubt that, actually. It's interesting that you bring that up, because, you know, every time I've been on Coast to Coast, you've always allowed me to say whatever I want to say, and yet I hear it all the time. There are many people who think Coast to Coast AM, because of its very success in a government-restricted market, is somehow controlled or influenced by the Illuminati or some secret society. I mean, how do you respond to that conspiratorial mindset?
Well, it's simple. I look at that conspiratorial mind as something that's open, refreshing, and I welcome all those thoughts, even though some of them may be way off base, Joshua, or I may not agree with specifically what they're saying. I think it's fresh. I really think it's wholesome. So, you know, I take their thoughts, their conspiracies, and then I digest it and I make up my own mind.
Well, you know, you were clearly a prodigy, reaching success in a tough field at such a young age. You won the Emmy. Were you ever afraid to delve into the paranormal, afraid that stigma attached to exploring the unknown might ultimately damage your mainstream career?
No, as a matter of fact, the reason I got into broadcasting at the ripe old age of 19 years old was to unravel these kinds of stories. I mean, I didn't want to just cover mainstream stories. I wanted to cover UFOs and ghosts and is there life out there on other planets. I mean, that's what I was pushed for. That's what I was bred for. You know, my mother, when I was a little boy, brought me home a book by Walter Sullivan, who at the time was the New York Times science writer. It was called We Are Not Alone. Man, I got into that. I tore it apart reading it. I mean, it was just incredible about his thoughts and theories of the possibilities of life out there on other planets. And I grew up saying to myself, God, what field can I go into that would give me the access I needed to try to unravel these stories? And it was broadcasting. It was the way, it was the key to open up the door to try to enlighten me to all these other topics.
Well, what are some outstanding experiences in your personal life that made you feel confident in the worthiness of paranormal investigation?
There have been a number of events, Joshua, in my life that have convinced me that there is more to life than just what we see. It could be spiritual. It could be the belief system that we are not alone in the universe. But things happened to me when I was a little boy. Just events. I was able to be very intuitive about events that were going on, strangely. I mean, it wasn't just a normal little, hey, I know who's calling on the phone. It was, I know when they're calling on the phone, and the phone would ring. And my parents would look at me like, how does he do this? And it just continued, and strange little things too. Like, we used to build model rockets when we were kids, and we'd launch them. Well, my best friend, it was his job after we built the rocket to put the little solid propellant engine inside the rocket, and then you hooked up a little electrodes to a battery, and then you'd launch it. And it was my job to broadcast the launch to the neighborhood. So all these kids are around, about 20 of them, and they'd sit back and they'd watch, and my buddy Gary Frank would put the engines in the rocket. He'd hook it up and he'd start, and I'd do the countdown and I'd broadcast the launch. And when we grew up, George Norrie goes into broadcasting. Gary Frank ended up helping to build the engines of the space shuttle.
Wow.
I mean, it's just neat little things like that have happened in my life all the time.
That synchronicity that is so invaluable.
Yes.
Well, now tell us about your encounter with Jimmy Hoffa.
1975 was I was a executive producer reporter for the CBS television station in Detroit, and I had called up Jimmy to get him on our newscast. And at that time, we were breaking virgin territory. We were bringing guests in the studio, not just going out to film them or videotape them at the time. So I said, we've got a segment here in our newscast, and I would love to talk with you. I know you want to try to come back and regain the Teamster presidency. And, he came in, and, he and I got to know each other. I was one of the few, if not the last reporter to talk with him before he disappeared in July of 1975. And when I had conducted the interview with him that day at our television station, I was walking him to his car. We had a huge parking lot in the back of the TV station. And he was telling me, he says, you know what, I've decided to go back. I want to be the president of the union. I've made my mistakes. And boy, he did, because he was involved with the mob. He said, you know what, I want a second chance. And sure enough, it was that second chance that got him killed.
Mm. Wow. Well, now, who are some of the people you've interviewed who made you feel a sense of great accomplishment afterward?
Probably my mother.
Yeah?
Actually, I have interviewed in my career. Like I said, I started when I was 19 years old. I've interviewed them all. Stanton Friedman, the paranormalist, Uri Geller, the psychic, presidential candidates from Ronald Reagan to George McGovern to Walter Mondale in the past. I mean, I've talked to so many people in my lives. Rosa Parks, she was the one who refused to give up a seat on the bus. In my career, I've seen it all. And, I would cover stories of murders. Seven people got killed in Detroit once, and I was there just after the police got there. And, I witnessed things like that. It's been an incredible career for me. But this one, Joshua, is the one that has really been the pinnacle for me, to be able to do this huge national radio show, which continues to grow in success. And now, as you well know, we're going to at least attempt to do a little bit of that on television with our June 13th program that you have heavily contributed to. That will be on the Sci-Fi Network. And if it's a successful show, I mean, they're going to run it. And if the numbers dictate that people want that, maybe it'll be a regular thing on the network.
It seems like a natural step to move into TV, not only because of your history, but also because the Coast to Coast AM website has so many visuals. I mean, you practically have a TV show there. What do you ultimately hope to achieve with this program?
I would like to bring a broader audience to the radio show. I mean, we have millions of listeners already, but I want to be able to attract more and more people who either, one, might not be aware of Coast to Coast, or two, really don't understand, I think, the significance of what we do. And I'm a very promotion-minded person, and by going on the Sci-Fi Network and creating not only a successful program for them, but also to generate new listeners for the radio show, to me, that would be just an ideal thing.
Well, so many people focus on the paranormal part of Coast to Coast, but it's also a very political show that critiques the government. For example, when I was on recently, earlier in the program, you discussed the executive directive President Bush signed on May 9th, basically giving him the powers of a dictator if he declares an emergency. How do you feel about the future of this country?
Well, I love the future of this country because people like you and people like me are not going to stop and let anybody get in the way of our constitutional rights. And I will broadcast until the day I die, Joshua, telling people that we don't need to be microchipped. We don't need to lose our privacy. And sure enough, I'm starting to see little things happening that are beginning to back us up. And I'm not going to stop. I mean, a lot of people have said, my God, aren't you worried about yourself? And no, I'm not. I'm a voice that's going to be heard, and the program has evolved from the Art Bell days where it was paranormal all the time. We still will do paranormal shows. There's no doubt about that. It's been the staple of the program. But the world has changed since 9/11. The audience has changed. On our last program, we did a complete show on missing POWs in Vietnam. And in the old days, we never would have approached that on Coast to Coast. But it's necessary. It's a human story. And I think if we could categorize Coast to Coast today and tell the world, what is this show? It's a show that affects people, that deals with people, that cares about people. Whether it is looking for Bigfoot or covering vaccines that could kill us all, it's that approach that we're going to continue to take.
Some people get creeped out by listening to Coast AM. Do you ever get creeped out?
I get creeped out when certain people call us. I've got one guy who claims to be the son of Satan. His name's Oscar. And that guy just creeps me out when he's on the phone. I had another guest on who claims to represent a fellow by the name of the Maitreya, who some people believe to be the Antichrist. Now, the individual in question does not. But man, when he's on the air, I feel queasy and nauseous. It's just weird. And I'm not alone. Thousands of people who were listening to him that night felt the same way. But by and large, you know, most of the topics don't scare me, but a couple of these individuals are pretty darn strange.
Well, I can't imagine the amount of knowledge you have about the fringes of human technology and behavior. What experiments would you like to see done that have not been done?
I would like to see more experiments into time travel. I would like to see more experiments into teleportation. Those two areas fascinate me, and I think there could be a real science behind that. I just think that we should also look for alternative fuels. I know we can do it. Why we're not doing it is keenly obvious, but we really need to do things like that, too.
Have you ever experienced any MIBs or similar monitoring, considering that you reach so many people who are conducting this fringe research?
Not that I'm directly aware of. I've had a couple guests on who have had their phones clipped while we've been on the air. I found that to be unusual, but I've never been approached. I've never been asked not to cover a story. I've been lucky. I don't know. I do know we're significant enough where they monitor what we do, they being, you know, top government officials and people like that. They probably assign an intern to listen to the program every night so they can have briefings the next day.
I bet they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, you served in the Navy where a lot of research and development takes place. Were you ever involved in secret projects?
No, never involved in secret projects. I was a public information officer. I spent time in Pensacola, the Pentagon, and a defense information school in Indianapolis. Nothing clandestine, nothing secret, just little me being an officer in the Navy, putting back a little bit to this country that I had taken out so much.
Mm-hmm. Why did you call your book Worker in the Light?
Well, my name in Arabic means the light, and the publisher thought it would be a great alliteration to have that on the title of the book. So he said, let's just call it Worker in the Light. And I said, well, all right, that's kind of an interesting name. I would have thought of something else, but that's what he liked. And it's been a pretty successful book.
How did you meet Bill Burns, your co-author, who also co-authored The Day After Roswell?
Bill was an initial guest of mine when I was doing my local show in St. Louis many years ago. 1997, I think, was my first exposure to Bill. And he would come on the program quite regularly talking about the many different things he's done, including The Day After Roswell. And I said to myself one day, you know, I like this guy. If I ever get to a point where I have to partner up with somebody and write a book, because I can't do it by myself, that's the guy I want. And I called him up one day when I came to Los Angeles and said, you know, Bill, I've been approached by a publisher. They want to know if I want to write a book about some of the unusual things I've done in my life. Are you interested in being a partner with me? You know, so many people, Joshua, have ghostwriters where they don't even write the book and somebody else does it for them. I'm not that way. You know, I wrote chapters. Bill wrote chapters. Bill deserves equal credit with me in that book. And so we partnered up on it, and we're writing several others where we have the same kind of arrangement.
I gather that you do believe there is some evil force sort of battling a good force in our world, whether we describe it as God or the devil or whatever. How do you feel about this Ouija board experiment you've been discussing?
Well, as you know, the first chapter of my book, Worker in the Light, talks about a bizarre Ouija board experience I had in St. Louis. And originally, as I unfolded into what I'm doing, the Ouija board scared the heck out of me. It doesn't anymore. I believe, I honestly believe, and I'm going to stick my psychic neck out, that a Ouija board is merely a conduit to the person who wants to summon up evil or bad spirits. And I don't care who you are. If you have a desire to do that, you're going to be able to do it through a telephone, through a shoe. It doesn't matter. A Ouija board just happens to be a game, a toy that has that capability of helping assist you if that's what you want. My experiment, and we will do it, is to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's the individual, not that Ouija board, that can pull in the evil through whatever source or whatever dimension it may be in.
Good point.
I hope I'm right.
Yeah. And, you know, I greatly admire your openness toward on-air experimentation involving the listeners. Do you feel that's been pretty effective?
Yes, it has. It's been not only effective, I think it's been very fascinating to the listeners because we've created now an interactive radio show. It's not just a host talking through the radio waves. It's interactive. It comes back to me. We do that through computer fast blasts, instant messaging, experiments where they become part of it, instant polls where I ask them a question, and they jump on it right away. I mean, it's really become a unique tool to the radio show.
After interviewing so many people who have psychic ability coupled with your own ability, how do you feel about these famous debunkers like the amazing Randy with his $1 million challenge?
Well, I think debunkers are healthy. The skeptics, the people who are out there who want to shoot down things that are unusual or unknown, that's fine. I'm glad they're out there. In Amazing Randy's situation, though he keeps saying he's got $1 million to put up, I want to see it. You know, I want to see it in an escrow. I don't want to see a letter from some institution he knows that says it's available. I want to see it, and then I want to get some bona fide people to go after it without his rules. I want an independent party to be able to do it. But in terms of debunkers and skeptics, necessary and healthy.
And one last question. After having interviewed so many people from so many varied backgrounds, what is the meaning of life?
You know, Joshua, to me, the meaning of life is a very simple statement. It is being able to enjoy this life with the people you care about until you go on to that other life, and it's a whole different ballgame after that.
Well said. And George Norrie, the clock has got us, but again, it's an enormous honor to have you on the program. I feel this TV project on the Sci-Fi Channel will be a great success. And I sincerely thank you for inviting me on your mini shows and taking the time to join me on Speaking of Strange tonight.
There will be many opportunities for you, Joshua, to be on Coast to Coast.
Thank you, George. And also thanks to Tom Danheiser, who has always done a brilliant job of juggling so many complex tasks to ensure quality. Now, keep in mind, if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you will also find links to not only Coast to Coast AM's website, but more information about this program on the Sci-Fi Channel that will air this Wednesday night. You are going to love it. And if you go to Speaking of Strange, the chat room is also full there. So if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you can easily sign in and participate in the fun. Well, how about that? George Norrie, the man who is sort of mysterious in his own right, you don't hear him answering questions that often about himself. He sure asks a lot of them to people all over the world. And, you know, Forrest, you've been in broadcasting since you were just a teenager, and it's pretty cool to be able to talk to people who have that kind of experience.
It is.
Success.
If we had more time, I would love to pick his brain just to ask him a million questions.
Yeah, yeah. And
but you got to do it instead. Thanks, Joshua.
Well, I'm glad that we could get any time with Norrie, because for a guy who is on the air for like 4 hours every single weeknight, he probably tries to stay away from the radio when he's not on the air himself. So it was pretty good that we were able to get him here. And of course, if you don't know what George Norrie looks like, well, then you'll get that opportunity to see him on that Sci-Fi Channel program called Into the Unknown with George Norrie. Again, that's 11 p.m. this Wednesday night, June the 13th. And they actually shot two of those pilots. One of them was dealing with extraterrestrials. Whitley Strieber was there. An abductee was there. And they gave him a lie detector test. I don't know that that one is ever going to air. I think that they are only going to air the ghost one they shot with me, Brian Irish, and Gary Busey. What a team that is, huh? And then if it's a success, this show will continue. So whether or not it continues and we are able to use a lot of our resources through the Sci-Fi Network to create experimentation and further our research just depends on whether or not you watch the program. And if you can't be up, you know, set your DVR or your TiVo or your VCR and watch it that way as well, because it is very difficult to get stuff to play on TV these days. You may know that I did a huge pilot with the Discovery Channel for a program called X-Ops. They spent an amazing amount of money. We had incredible resources. They shipped us all over the country to do work, and that thing probably will never air. It's sitting right now in a vault somewhere in Silver Springs, Maryland, in a building that is almost back-to-back with the NSA building. So some have speculated we may have learned a little too much, because some very bizarre stuff did happen. But I will have a chance to share more of the information with you about what we found in Roswell, New Mexico for the Dark 30 tour. That is coming up this September, and that's going to be right here in Asheville. Jim Mars will be in town. Nick Redfern will be here. And, if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you'll find a link there to the Dark 30 experience if you want to be part of that. So do you feel that Norrie's statement about the meaning of life is resonant with your own feelings, Forrest?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. That's about all you can do. Try to enjoy
yourself.
Of course,
everyone has their own interpretation of what the meaning of life is, when everyone knows it's really 42.
And, in the movie The Meaning of Life, they came up with two principles. One, matter equals energy. And two,
hats.
Men should wear more hats. And, of course, there was a silence in the room, and a guy said,
what?
What was that you said about hats again? Huh? So who knows? Maybe there is something deeper to that discussion than we know. A lot of people think that if they just had $1 million that life would be perfect tomorrow. But when we come back from this break, I'm going to tell you a bit of unsettling news about some of these lottery winners and a little experiment we've talked about doing here live on the air with our listeners, similar to what George Norrie has done in the past on his show, something in which you can participate. And by the way, the phone lines are now open. We'll be taking your calls. I understand there is a gentleman who wants to get on the air and tell you about some weird creatures that have been running around his house. This should be intriguing. I am Joshua P. Warren, and you're listening to Speaking of Strange. Speaking of Strange, we'll be right back. There. Are listening to Speaking of Strange. Soon we are coming up on our dark 30 hour when we can tell you some of the stranger, more outrageous news that you probably won't hear any other place. And if you want to participate in those conversations, you can do so. We're also going to give away something free next hour, so stay tuned for that as well. But first, let's go to the phone lines. Hello, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Joshua. Dan Shepherd here. I'm glad to talk to you again. I told you I'd surprise you from time to time.
Oh, that's great. I always enjoy hearing from you.
Oh, I enjoy hearing from you, too. You're so interested. And George sounds good.
Great.
Yeah, your show is really picking up, and I'm proud of you. First off, I want to start off with a little strange story to pick things up here. The last two or three nights, the first night it scared me to death. I went out on my back porch, right, to get ice, to get ice out of the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's glassed in. I looked out, man, and they were like 3.5 foot tall people. I mean, I'm not going to say people because people don't glow a light green color at nighttime.
Wow. So these were glowing light green, 3.5 feet tall.
Yes, and the thing is, two of them automatically spotted me looking at them.
No.
And I was in the darkness, so I opened the freezer up, but when I seen them, I closed the freezer so nobody could see me, but they seen me. Their eyes was like a yellowish color, and I really couldn't see no pupils at the distance. Okay, I was paralyzed. I just stood there. And, I wanted to go out, but I didn't go out the first night. And, they seemed the third one looked at me, and then they seemed to look at each other, and they started walking out into the woods, and as they walked out, it turned into a lighter green color, and then they were gone.
Now, how many of these people were there?
Three,
okay.
We're both saying people. This is not people.
Right.
Unless it's they're drinking something that, really make them feel good and turn green and blue.
Yeah.
But now anyway, the second night, okay, I remember time to time that I went out there the first night. I went out there the second night. This time around, I went out there all the way outside. I had a little hiding place where I sit out in the patio. Well, it's past the patio. It's into the woody part of my patio. Yeah, that can't happen again. This time, one of them was bending over, and he was, like, digging something. It seemed like he would seem to be digging soil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the same thing. All of a sudden, they all three looked at me again. How they seen me, I have no idea. I was stealth. I had my military outfit on, my blacks,
mm-hmm.
and I was hiding in the shadows like I was taught to do in martial arts. Well, Okay, same thing happened. They moved back into the same direction, and as they moved out, they turned that lighter green color, and then they just disappeared. Third night, they didn't seem to even look at me. They seemed to be looking around at the ground. Now, yes, I did go out there and look around at the ground myself. There is areas out there, and you're welcome to come check it out. You're always welcome.
Well, thank you. Now, did you try to photograph them?
Okay. I have an upstage phone. Yes, I think I'm not big. You're going to have to show me how to pull this up on my video camera off my upstage phone.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I've got them.
So you captured them on video?
On the third time around.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So this is ours. It belongs to ours. We put this on the radio. This goes on your website. This has been happening. Now, this has not happened now. And, you know, I'm going to check it out again tonight just to make sure I'm not going crazy. You know, I'm not drinking anything or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
My mind's clear.
Yeah.
I have to keep it clear. Doing what you're doing. I want to make sure you have the authentic stuff.
Well, now, yes. Do you think these are aliens?
Well, that's what I was telling my fiancé. Yes, I have a fiancé now.
Mm-hmm.
But their heads seem to be a little bit bigger than they should have been.
Mm-hmm. So are you afraid of being
like
abducted?
They're backwards to the backside.
Yeah.
Of their heads. I see no hair. The clothing, everything was a solid color. And it was glowing. I don't think we have these type of clothing, right? Do we have these type of clothing in the country right now? And do they make up for 3.5 foot tall people?
When I get this video footage, I'm going
to
analyze it.
Yeah, you're going to have to check it out for me, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to have...
I'm going to go to the station or the pub.
Okay, well, I'll give you my address, my shipping address.
I have that somewhere.
Okay.
Let me get I better get that now because I have a few goodies for you.
Okay.
I leave you without. I told you a while back when we had a discussion. Yeah, sometimes I'm controversial,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes I have some strange things happen, and you agreed with me. Sometimes things like this follows people like me.
Yeah.
Let's get your address.
Okay, and this goes for anybody listening who would like to send me video or pictures.
Please.
It's P.O. Box.
P.O. Box.
16801.
16801.
And that's Asheville, North Carolina. Zip is 28816.
8816. I had it wrong.
Okay, so if you send that to me, we are going to definitely get together and watch this thing and analyze it and see what we think about it. And if it looks something good enough for us to follow up on and investigate.
This is going to be something that's going to stand out.
Okay, I'm excited.
And the thing is, the great thing about this is I've got an envelope and I've got to go through it tonight. I've got your right address, and then I've not had it. My mother has been, when she was alive, had a habit of pointing the camera towards a certain direction. I don't know why the lady did it. She must have been psychic. Obviously, she was quite a bit psychic, actually. We talked about that. But this is not rigged. You can have this checked out. There's a photo. Okay, and it comes from way back.
Mm-hmm.
There is a light. It looks like it actually looks like a shot of either a steady shot of an asteroid coming down, or a steady shot of a light shooting straight up.
Hmm.
I'm not sure which way it's going. But that's one, if you will put that, you might want to put that on the website.
Hey, you got it. And
there's so many good things, Josh, with it. I know you're in a hurry, and I can finish it off in a few seconds.
Yeah, I'm up on a break here, but sure, go ahead.
Okay, when's the break?
It's coming up right now, actually. But go
okay,
ahead and you got
to. Do I need to hold on for a second?
No, just go ahead and go ahead and tell us what you'd like
okay.
to pass along.
Okay. The next thing. Now during Halloween, you have your trip to the Bermuda Triangle.
Yep.
Okay. I'm getting ready to try to make some contacts with my people on Biltmore Estate. I got many passes, and I'm going to try to get us a few more passes for some of your people.
Uh-huh.
So we get to go up there for free.
Well, that sounds like a good deal.
We want. We might have to sneak around a little bit, but once they find out who I am, they're going to let us do what we want to do.
Oh, well, okay, that's a very generous offer, and hey, Dan, we got to go, but thanks for calling in. Good hearing from you, and I look forward to getting that video, and as soon as I get it, my friends, you will be the first ones to hear about what is actually captured there. It's one thing for someone to say, hey, I've seen something weird. It's another thing to say, I got the video camera out, and I'm going to send you the footage. So, I'll let you know, and he said we can even post it online as well. I'm Joshua P. Warren. We'll continue on Speaking of Strange right after this. Send us the footage.
I want to see this footage.
And I tell you what else. He talked about his military background. Dan, if you're listening, go out there and nab one of these guys. Shoot him. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't tell people on the air to shoot little creatures running around the house. That might be bad form. Or it could be groundbreaking. Can you imagine if Dan shows up at the studio and he's got a little alien in a net? Of course, he might get
in the net. He's not going to bother taking it and put it in a little cage or anything. He's going to just keep it in the net.
Depends on how studly the guy is, I guess. I'd shoot him. I'd shoot one. But you hate to think there are just some kids maybe running around the house. But he said they disappeared. So, that's not ordinary. So, let's see. That's one of the cool things about doing this show.
I don't have a drink also, but right now.
when it comes to this program, we have that kind of access where, if somebody actually does capture a Bigfoot or an alien or a fairy or a little person, just call us up, contact us, and if you've got it, well, we will also make ourselves available and accessible, if it sounds credible, to take a look at this thing and break it right here first on Speaking of Strange. We do break news from time to time. In fact, we had Tom Biscardi on, last year, claiming that he had the remains of what may have been a dead Sasquatch. Turns out it was remains of a giant beaver. And I'm not exactly sure how you confuse Bigfoot with a big beaver, but nonetheless, that's what happened.
That one. It's not 10 o'clock yet.
That's what happened. Oh, man. Yes, we're coming up on our dark 30 hour after 10 p.m. But I am also glad that Dan mentioned this paranormal cruise, because they keep extending the deadline, but my understanding is this month is it, because after that, Carnival is going to take back any unused cabins from our group. But if you want to spend about five nights with us in the Bermuda Triangle, going down to the Bahamas, exploring pirate torture chambers and some really creepy places like that, you got to make your reservation now, and you can begin making payments on this. Just go to paranormalcruise.com and make that reservation. You can contact Helen Preston at Fugazi Travel. You can write down her number also. It's toll-free, 800-221-7181, 800-221-7181, or just call them locally at 274-2555. And you'll get all the details on that, but we're all going to be there, and it's going to be a blast. We did this once before and had such a good time that now we're going back. We're bringing bigger guns, better material here, the most groundbreaking technology like the paranormal PC, and, of course, we will be reporting on this program everything that happens. It's wonderful to be able to go out there and interact with folks, and that's why I was thinking about this online experiment we should try out. If anybody is able to call us from a casino, especially if you're, say, maybe Harrah's Cherokee Casino here in Western North Carolina, and you can get a cell signal, because sometimes it's difficult to get a cell signal in these places, I want you to call the show. And we are going to ask all of our listeners to send out a telekinetic vibe to give you a jackpot. Now, we did an experiment one time here where we tried to move an ink pen on the table by asking everybody listening to the show, all the billions and billions of listeners around the globe, to focus on this ink pen moving, and I kid you not, it moved. It was over a break. It shifted positions. I didn't actually see it move, but I put it in one position. I came back. It was in a slightly different position. So next time, hey, we're probably going to get a webcam in here at some point. That's going to make those kinds of experiments fun. We'll just stick the webcam right there on the object, and everybody can see live for him or herself if this thing actually moves. That's the great thing about having an interactive audience. And when we come back, we're going to finally debut the highly touted Dark 30 Hour. That's when we enter the safe harbor zone. All the kiddies. Broadcasting from the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Speaking of strange, I'm Joshua P. Warren, talking right now with Professor Solomon. He is the author of How to Make the Most of a Flying Saucer Experience. It's packed with tons of good advice, stuff you may not even think that much about. For example, what's the answer to this question, Professor? Can I smoke aboard the saucer?
Well, I mentioned that, and I say absolutely. If you do, you're going to get tractor beamed straight down to the earth, because the if you're aboard one of the ships with the space people, those kind of angelic beings, they're vegetarians. They don't smoke. They're going to kick you right off the ship. If you're aboard the saucer with those bug-eyed aliens, they also are going to get rid of you, but for a kind of different reason. I go into why they're giving these medical exams, and I conclude that it's very possible that they're doing some kind of insurance fraud with the government on Medicare and Medicaid, that they're doing these quick exams of tens of thousands of people filing the paperwork and getting paid, and they know that if they allow smoking in the in the medical facility, they're going to lose their payments. So either kind of saucer, don't smoke, you're going to get in trouble.
Actually, that might be a good way to get back to Earth, though, huh? I mean, if you want to get out of the ship.
If you want to, yes, that's the quickest way out, because they do not tolerate smoking aboard a flying saucer.
So keep a pack of cigarettes in your kit if you do find that the experience is not so pleasant, so
right,
you can
along
light
with
up.
Along with your crackers and water, which I tell you to bring, too, because they... The bug-eyed aliens don't even bother to give you anything to eat or drink while you're waiting for your medical exam.
Those dirty bastards.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, now let's see here. We also have, should I report my flying saucer experience to the authorities when I get back?
And the answer to that question, I say absolutely not. They're not going to believe you. They're going to mock you. You're going to be known as a nut, as a kook. Don't report it, but I do recommend reporting it to one of the saucer study groups of private individuals who will take you seriously, will do a kind of a competent investigation of your report, no matter how outrageous it is, and, you know, will make a judgment as to its validity and maybe even write it up if it's something that's interesting.
Now, what can you tell us about how these saucers actually work?
Well, I have a chapter called How Do They Fly? And first I give a list of all the scientific explanations that have been given. If I can, let me just read it to you. Plasma dynamics, antimatter, reversible electromagnetism, the piezoelectric effect, orgone energy, etheric force, photons, and then Adamski called what he called the progravitic principle, whatever that was. And then I suggest that maybe it's simply microwaves. And I tell people, if you look in your microwave oven, you may see that slice of pizza floating slightly, and maybe microwaves are really how they make the saucers float.
Well, that would make sense. I agree with that. Now, so you've suggested already that maybe there is some arrangement between the flying saucers and the government. Do you think that the government is in cahoots with these folks?
What do you mean with suppressing the information, or actually?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I go in when I first near the beginning of the book, I give all the possible explanations other than extraterrestrial ships. And the first couple, and this was during the late 40s and the early 50s. And what people really believed at first was that these were either Russian or American experimental aircraft. And it was only kind of later, thanks to people like Ray Palmer with his articles in Fate magazine, that the extraterrestrial hypothesis came into play. So originally it was really, a lot of people believed that it was the government that was flying these experimental aircraft.
Mm-hmm. We keep having all this weird stuff emerging about the moon, and I think there's plenty of good reason to believe that humans have been to the moon. In fact, I feel like they have probably gone back and forth many more times than we've been told about. And there are all these inconsistencies, though, and what's reported there. And, of course, lately we now know that thousands of these videotapes of original Apollo-era footage are mysteriously missing. You know, the most important stuff, the most important footage that perhaps we have ever shot. And it's also even more mysterious because if you had that actual original footage, you may be able to analyze it in some physical way to see if it really had traveled through the Van Allen belt or something like that. I don't know. But have you found that this whole moon situation ties in distinctly to the flying saucer phenomenon?
Well, you know, I haven't gone into that much, but I know there was some people that were saying that some of the footage was suppressed because there were flying saucers were seen on the footage that they took from the Apollo rockets. And let me just mention that what people don't know is that a number of the 1950s contactees claimed to have actually visited the moon. This is back in the 50s. There was a fellow named Buck Nelson, who was one of the first contactees. He published a book in around 56, I think it was, called My Trip to Mars, the Moon, and Venus. And he really claimed to have befriended the extraterrestrials. These were the angelic type. And they took him to the moon. They took him to Venus, where he was shown an advanced civilization. There was also a fellow named Howard Menger in the 50s who wrote a book called From Outer Space to You. He claimed that he was flown to Venus. He never got off. He just saw from above these kind of dome-shaped buildings on Venus. Then he claims he was actually taken to the moon. They landed, and he was made part of a sort of a convention of engineers and scientists from all over the world who had been brought to the moon. This is in the mid-50s, and they kind of were lectured by the extraterrestrials, treated to food and wine, and then he was flown back to Earth. Now, whether this actually happened, I don't know, but it's certainly an unknown chapter in our exploration of the moon.
Hmm. Yeah, there are so many of these little pieces that just don't quite add up. Intriguing stuff. Now, for those of us who are never going to be able to go to the moon, which is probably most of us, for those of us who want to document one UFO flying overhead, but don't have the ability to get any closer than the ground if we are not so lucky to be abducted, do you have tips on what a good paranormal investigator should do on the ground when a UFO flies overhead to properly document that sighting and make sure that you can rule out some of the conventional things aside from optical observation?
Well, first of all, you should obviously be taking notes, intricate notes, with the time. You should be videoing whatever you can, maybe tape recording your impressions as you speak. You hopefully are not alone. There's other people that can corroborate what you're seeing and what you're saying. I have a little thing in the book about these UFO detectors that you used to be able to buy. I don't know if they're still for sale, but you can actually make one pretty easy. They're basically a kind of magnetometer that can detect the sort of magnetism that UFOs, if they're actually propelled by electromagnetism, would be given off and kind of ring a bell. So you might want to get one of those devices or make one. And certainly you've just got to be alert and kind of scientific and not have any preconceptions, I think, as to what it is you're seeing. You want to arrive at that afterwards, after you examine the facts, not start with the fact, here's a flying saucer from another planet and here's what I'm seeing. Wait and make your judgments afterwards.
You know, speaking of those UFO detectors, my friend Mobius has a website that sells some of these devices. It's paranormal-investigation.com. So that's paranormal investigation with the hyphen between the two words. And, hey, maybe somebody will use one of those in the field and tell us what they experience after hearing this interview. Well, now, you have some trivia in here that I thought was quite telling. In particular, one about the pyramid hat that we see so often used in popular movies and context. Tell us about that hat and the history of it.
Well, I go into the use of pyramids, which was kind of popular during, I guess, the 60s. And then I talk about the fact that when you're in outer space, you're much more exposed to cosmic rays than down here on Earth. And the pyramids and the pyramid hat, which was invented by a guy from Czechoslovakia, supposedly what they do is focus cosmic rays on you when you're inside one of the larger pyramids or when you're wearing one on top of your head. So I recommend if you're going to be aboard a saucer, here's a unique opportunity to wear one of those hats, focus the cosmic rays on you, and see what they do. Supposedly they can cure colds, they can enhance your psychic abilities, and it'll be an interesting experience in any case to see what it feels like to wear one of those. And I point out that it's been speculated that the kind of the conical wizard's hat that was worn during the Middle Ages was a kind of a descendant of the pyramid-shaped hat that the Egyptian priests wore in their pyramids, and that the point of the pyramids and the pyramid hat was to collect these cosmic rays and kind of use that energy.
And I also found it humorous here that, speaking of these conical-shaped hats, you mentioned that a guy who used to be sort of the village idiot in most people's or many people's minds would sit around wearing such a cap to see if he could focus cosmic rays, and his name was Dunce, right?
Right. Well, and yes, that's where we get the name Dunce. There was a fellow named Dunce Scotus. He was a philosopher, a Scottish philosopher during around the 1200s, 1300s. He was very respected philosopher, but he had enemies, and they kind of mocked him, and they are responsible for he was one of the last to wear that conical hat. He was one of the last wizards who dressed like a wizard. His more modern opponents would kind of make fun of his dress, and that's where we get the name Dunce Cap from, Dunce Scotus. So it's ironic because he was a brilliant man, one of the great philosophers, and he has come down to us simply as in the name dunce cap.
One of those Paul Harvey rest of the stories.
That's right. That's right. It's very, very odd that he would be known that way.
Yeah. Okay, we're up against another break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking about these practical things to keep in mind regarding exploring the flying saucer phenomenon and what you should keep in mind if indeed you are so lucky or perhaps unlucky to be abducted. You can learn more about Professor Solomon if you go to ProfessorSolomon.com. There is also a link at SpeakingOfStrange.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and Speaking of Strange will return. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Did you know that Brian Irish had a set of lungs like that on him? That's our lemur band.
That's
once
right.
Again, we were playing all the music.
Do you know that's the first time I've ever sang in public? First time.
You're kidding.
It's always been in the car, in the shower.
Wow. Amazing. Well, look at what we accomplished for a first-time benefit concert. We made the music, the singing, it was all right there fresh from mainly this studio. Most of the people who are playing are somehow related to the radio business here at 570. And it was a great time, though, and that's what we do here on Speaking of Strange. We try to discuss things that interest you and are fun. And speaking of which, let me tell you what we're going to be getting up and getting into here very soon. And by the way, I'm going to get back to my discussion with Professor Solomon shortly, but I wanted to fit this hour. You can come with us on a paranormal cruise into the Bermuda Triangle to investigate pirate ghosts with Lemur in the Bahamas.
Oh, yeah.
Brian and I are going to be there hosting this thing along with the other Lemur guys, and it's going to be October of 2007. Now, we did one in 2004 that was an absolute blast, and this one's going to be twice as fun.
Oh, I guarantee it.
This is a six-night cruise, and it only costs $599 per person for an inside cabin. That's leaving from Charleston, South Carolina, on Tuesday, October 16th of 2007. It's a Carnival Victory from Charleston, and we're going to go to Freeport and Nassau in the Bahamas. We're going to have plenty of time to investigate some of these pirate torture chambers and stuff like that. And mind you, $599 for 6 days, that covers not only the cruise and the investigations and the programs we do. That is all the food you can eat the entire time. Unlimited.
The food is awesome. You gain like 10 pounds. So you got to lose 10 pounds before you go.
That's the key.
It's true.
The only thing you have to pay for on the ship is alcoholic beverages, and they're usually cheap, you know. But anyway, one other thing to be mindful of, in 2007, to go to the Bahamas, you have to have a passport. When we went in 2004, you could just bring a birth certificate and driver's license, but they have changed the law on that. But here is what you need to do if you want to go with us. You got to give a $50 deposit to Fugazi Travel by this coming October 16th. That means you got 2 weeks to cough up $50. Now, we're working on getting that extended. But nonetheless, jump in there right now. We have 100 cabins reserved at this point. And if you want to go, and you can make payments at certain dates along the way, you can go to paranormalcruise.com, paranormalcruise.com, or you can call Fugazi Travel. Talk to Helen Preston, and that number is toll-free, 800-221-7181. That's 800-221-7181, and be sure to get in on this. I can't wait. It's over a year away, and I am jonesing for it already.
Oh, me as well.
Yeah, so I wanted to make sure everybody knew about that. We just announced this publicly tonight, so you have a chance to get in early in case we do run out of space. Now, getting back to the matter at hand, how to make the most of a flying saucer experience, and goodness knows when we're cruising through the Bermuda Triangle in October, that might be a good time to get abducted, frankly. We saw some weird lights in the sky when we went before, Brian.
Yeah, we sure did. We sure did.
And Columbus even reported some weird lights down there in 1492.
Right, along the horizon.
Well, Professor Solomon has written a guide everyone should read, including the tools that you need to put in your kit to prepare for this. In fact, Mobius here in the chat room said that we certainly need to remind everyone to get a good mechanical camera, because I guess a lot of times electronics fail around flying saucers, right, Professor Solomon?
That's right. I do have camera and a camera on my list of things to take in your encounter kit, but I also make a note saying be sure to ask your hosts if it's okay to take their picture. If it is, then you can use that camera. But yeah, take a camera by all means.
So definitely you want to have good etiquette in order to earn the respect of these people, considering they have all the control in the situation.
You're in their hands, yes.
Okay. Now, tell me about this connection between UFOs and Elvis.
Well, that's one of the final chapters I have in the book, is that I tell people you may be lucky enough to kind of peek around the corner, and go when you're going into the lounge, hear some music coming out of there, you find that Elvis is there, because there are rumors that he was abducted by a UFO at some point during his life. There are other rumors that he got some of his songs from extraterrestrials. And, of course, there have been his sightings, frequent sightings of UFOs over his tomb at Graceland. So when you get aboard that saucer, you never know. You might just happen to kind of come across Elvis. If you do, get his autograph, get some words of wisdom from him. It's a rare opportunity.
Now, do you feel like that historically, as religions developed around the world, that they could be the product of ancient encounters with aliens?
Well, yeah. Another thing I go into in the book is that it may be that flying saucers and extraterrestrials are sort of something very ancient in modern guise. In other words, it could be that these bug-eyed aliens, for example, are what used to be called demons or fairies or leprechauns, but we have to put it in modern terms. It has to be in some kind of scientific context. So we've made it into ships from outer space and living creatures. But it may be that this is some kind of paranormal event that in other cultures they would perfectly understand as some kind of creatures, for entities from another dimension. But we can't accept that, or at least, in the West today, we cannot accept that. We have to couch it in some kind of scientific terminology.
How do you feel about aliens living on Earth among us that look just like us? I mean, for example, Brian here beside me could be an alien, and I don't even know it.
Actually, I am.
Yeah.
Well, I do have. There's a picture I have in there somewhere of where I state that. Where is that? Here it is. That there are probably aliens living among us, and you can't even tell. They pass among us just like humans. And they have a picture, although it looks pretty much like a bug-eyed alien. He's just put a tie around his neck.
Yeah, see that.
I don't know if you saw that one.
Yeah.
Actually, I look exactly like this.
he's got a tie and a baseball cap, and he's trying to pass for a human being. But I think you would see that it was an alien.
Makes you wonder. And even a Tibetan monk has been to Venus, apparently.
Well, there's this fellow, a very interesting fellow named Lobsang Rampa. He published a lot of New Age books during the 50s. He claimed to be a Tibetan monk who had traveled. He wrote a book called My Visit to Venus, published in 1966. He claimed to have taken a flying saucer to Venus. He made all kinds of other claims. The problem with him was, after his first book, which was a great bestseller worldwide, after his first book was published, it was revealed that he was an Englishman, an English journalist named Cyril Hoskin. He admitted that, but he claimed that he had fallen, as Cyril Hoskin, he had fallen from a ladder, suffered a concussion, whereupon the Englishman left his body, and this Tibetan named Lobsang Rampa inhabited him. Whether he was Tibetan or not, it's who knows. But he published, I would say, something like 20, 25 New Age books, which were once very popular. He's been kind of forgotten today.
Hmm. I wonder if, you know, I'm looking through the section on possible explanations for what they could be, fairies, sky creatures. I like the time travelers angle on that one. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I think some of those explanations, like that they're from other times or that they're from other dimensions, to me, that seems almost more likely, more plausible than that they're from other stars, other planets in other star systems. When you think about it, it would take so long, unless you can travel faster than light, which supposedly you can't. It takes so long to get here, and why would you come here and throw up, you know, there's so many places you go. That seems kind of improbable compared to the fact that there have to be some other dimensions. There have to be other worlds, and maybe these either entities or vehicles are coming from those worlds, or they're coming from another time. I think those should be considered. Those are realistic possibilities.
Sure. And now we know that the physicists are saying we have up to 11 different dimensions, so who the heck knows? We got to take another break. When we come back from this, I will wrap up my conversation with this fascinating fellow, Professor Solomon, regarding his book, How to Make the Most of a Flying Saucer Experience. You can learn more about him and find a link to his website if you visit speakingofstrange.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Back to Speaking of Strange, the favorite show of aliens, not to mention wendigos, little people, and skunk apes, I understand. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, talking with Professor Solomon. He's the author of How to Make the Most of a Flying Saucer Experience. Professor, when people find out you've written this book, do they think you were crazy?
People have shown it to kind of enjoy that I've been able to approach this subject with humor, because it's usually kind of a very somber kind of matter.
Yeah. Yeah, so people are satisfied. They like that approach.
People who've read the book have enjoyed it. They've told me, yeah. And they've learned something about flying saucers, because what I've tried to do is show people that before we had the bug-eyed aliens who were kind of scary and nasty, actually it was a much more positive phenomenon in which you had these angelic, humane kind of inhabitants of flying saucers who had really true wisdom to say whether they were real or not, whether the people who reported on them were making this up or not. There's real wisdom to be gotten from some of these contactees of the 50s, and if the book can just kind of remind people of that, I think it will have done some good.
Well, aside from going to your website, is there anything else you'd like to pass along to listeners who might want to learn more about you and your work?
Well, the website has it all. The website has my 5 books on it, which descriptions of all of them, has a biography, it has some reviews of the books, and I would just ask people to go to the site and check out some of my other books, including this, and you can buy them through the website, through Amazon.com, but in any case, check them out, yeah.
All your books are entertaining and almost interactive, the way you include yourself as a character, so I definitely like it. And the clock has got us, but I hope everyone will check out that website. Keep us updated on what you're up to, and I thank you for joining me on the program tonight.
Joshua, thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. Professor Solomon, his website is ProfessorSolomon.com. That last name is spelled S-O-L-O-M-O-N. There is a link at SpeakingOfStrange.com. I bet he's a fun guy to hang out with. He looks like it in his pictures, doesn't he, Brian?
Oh, yeah. Those pictures were hilarious. Loved it.
Yeah. the expressions on his face are... he's a comedian on the page. Well, now, guess what? This means, for you and me, Brian, we are 5 minutes away from leaving the studio, driving back to Barnardsville, driving up that mountain to Greystone Cabins, where we will rejoin the hunt for Bigfoot into the wee hours of the morning tonight.
Yes, sir. Can't wait.
It's too bad we can't just, you know, like bring the microphone with us and broadcast live from the Bigfoot Hunt all night long.
A live remote. A live remote is what we should have done tonight. That would have been great.
But, boy, we do have recorders there, and I'm telling you, we're going to keep you updated on what happens. We will have a full report with pictures and everything. For all we know, by now they've already seen Bigfoot.
That's what I'm saying. This could be a good thing or a bad thing. We haven't heard from them, but that, one, means nothing happened, or two, Bigfoot's eaten them, so...
And the night is not over yet.
He might have drug him off into the woods.
Yeah, well, you know, he's got that bacon or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Cooking. He's, you know,
yeah.
Bigfoot's a hungry guy. He's got 800 pounds or whatever to feed.
Yeah.
And we want you to know, if you're interested in Greystone, I mean, it's a beautiful place. It's an enchanting property. They've been on the Travel Channel. They've been friends of ours a long, long time, Johnny and Cindy Caps, and it really is just a wonderful place to visit. They're very kind to us, and they've been generous with allowing us to use their property for research purposes. And you can learn more about them through the link at speakingofstrange.com. If you go there, you'll find a little link to Greystone Cabins on, I think, the right side of the page.
Right. Yeah, I believe that's where it's at.
I'm actually tired, man. This weekend we've been running around in the woods, and now we came in here to do the show, and we're going back for more.
Right, right.
And tonight, we're not just going to hunt for Bigfoot. We're going around to different cabins where ghostly experiences have been occurring. And just last night, there was a woman in a cabin all by herself, and she said that she kept hearing someone knock or shake around her door. She thought it was her husband who had been outside staying up later than her. Three times she went to the door. Nobody was there. And this crowd that we have, believe it or not, it's not a very joking crowd when it comes to pranks. We're not running around messing with each other.
No.
Everybody's taking it seriously because we want to see something seriously.
You know, before I come in here today, I laid down for a power nap. Mm-hmm. And as I'm laying there and starting to go into twilight, you know, I'm just kind of rocking back and forth, I felt something massaging both sides of my legs. And I was like, what the heck is this? And I drifted off.
You're a sick man, bro.
I don't know what it was. I really don't know. But my companion also felt it.
You're even sicker.
Hey, now.
Well, that's a good ghost, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Better than what the aliens will do to you.
Yeah.
Or Bigfoot, apparently.
Well, we don't want to go there.
We've had a lot of innuendos on tonight's program, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
We have to, though. I had a strange experience last night. You know, I'm a very vivid dreamer, and I understand that, you know, sometimes you're in that state when you're not sure if you're dreaming or not, and your mind plays tricks and weird things happen.
Twilight.
That twilight area. And I had an extremely vivid dream that a ghost manifested in the bedroom of the cabin where I was sleeping, and when I woke up in the middle of the night, it took me a second to realize that it was a dream. I mean, I didn't know what was happening. Then I finally said, oh, well, that was a heck of a dream. And I rolled over and I went back to sleep. Now today, I'm thinking, hey, was that a dream?
Right.
I mean, did I open my eyes, see this thing, and then disappeared? And finally, I came to and said, that must have just been a dream. Seems like a logical thing.
Yeah, just like my legs, Josh, yeah. Just like my legs being massaged.
Nobody was massaging me.
Hey, now that's been actually reported up there before at Greystone. So,
leg massage?
Yeah. Poke all
why
you
would,
want.
Why
poke
would
all
a
you
ghost
want.
Massage your leg?
I don't know. I've never had that happen. That is kind of strange.
That could have been another kind of dream that you were having.
Then my companion also had the same dream.
Well, maybe it wasn't a dream after all, then.
That's right.
But weird stuff.
Yeah.
It's just like one guy said that he saw a cat run into his cabin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he closed the door because the cat would like to go in there and scratch on a pole. They had like a rough tree.
Inside,
yeah.
Very cool.
And then he went outside and he saw the cat appear once again outside that had just gone inside.
Right, and there was no way to get out, yet he's letting the cat in again.
It's like some kind of warp up there. Well, that's it for the show. We're heading back up there to see what else happens, and we'll keep you informed. Next week, Angela Moore, the Hillbilly Psychic, and I don't have enough time to thank everybody I usually thank, but you know who you are, and especially Robert McGee, our webmaster, always doing a good job keeping that site updated and complete. And as for everyone else here, on behalf of Brian Irish and Agnes Cheek, we appreciate your listenership every Saturday night when there is no football, 8 p.m., and we'll see you next Saturday. Until then, go to speakingofstrange.com.